Hi, I'm Michael Mwenzo, guest host for The Checkout. You may know me from my band, The Shakes. Today, we have a very special program because Simon, who's standing right next to me,
hey,
has asked me to explore a vitally important yet not often celebrated part of our African-American musical heritage, which is integral to the development of jazz and the blues. We're going to talk about what is commonly called the Negro spirituals, the slave songs, sacred music. We're going to actually start talking about what we would say line prayers. And we have a very amazing special guest today on vocals and organ. You may know him for the genius of his piano playing, but we have the great Sullivan Fortner here. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. We're going to trace this music all the way back to the 17th century during the time of slavery, all the way up to the evolution of modern gospel music, touching on people such as Thomas Dorsey, Mahalia Jackson, James Cleveland, and even Thomas Whitfield, to the modern-day incarnations of gospel and jazz. We'll also look at how all this music has served as a foundation behind the civil rights movement, from the emancipation all the way up to Martin Luther King Jr.
And I am so delighted for you, Michael Mwenzo, to join us to introduce a new angle, a new facet to the great Sullivan Fortner.
This is something I've been trying to get this ever since I came to New York. He's laughing. Since I came to New York 5 years ago, I have been saying to myself that one day, if I have the opportunity, I'm going to want to present this man in this context today.
Yeah.
So we're glad to finally do it today, to have this man sing, but also to touch on parts of his life and music that he got into before he even was a jazz musician, too.
How often have you sung for the public, Sullivan?
Never.
He does it in jam sessions, like at 2 a.m.
I do it at jam sessions when people are drunk and they ain't gonna remember. But for some reason, it always ends up on Facebook or something.
It does. But I've been lucky. I've been lucky to be at jam sessions 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning and hear this man display all of his artistry. So this is a very beautiful thing.
Well, why don't we hear some of this artistry right now?
I think, Sullivan, we were talking about, you remember, we were talking about line prayers or Negro meters. What was the importance of them?
What is a Negro meter? Yeah, I didn't even know what that term.
Well, it's not really Negro meters. Like line gospel. It's called line gospel.
And what were they?
It's kind of similar to, basically they took hymns that were written in like the 16th, 17th century, like Isaac Watts hymns or something like that, John Newton hymns. And, you know, as part of the black aesthetic, we changed things around. You know, we changed the melody. We, you know, the harmony's different. It's almost kind of related to similar how we did the field hollers and the blues.
Yeah.
What's one? There's a lot of call and response. There's a lot of repetition there. I'll give you an example of a song. I'll do a quick one.
Which song are you going to do?
I had I Love the Lord, He Heard My Cry.
Okay.
Basically, the leader would get up, or the preacher, or whoever's leading the song would get up, or deacon would get up and say, I love the Lord, He heard my cry. And then the congregation would sing, I love the Lord, He heard my cry. And then the leader sang, and pitied every groan. And the leader sang, that's a piece of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how that's kind of the timbre of the voice that they would sing.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of like the expression that would come behind it. It's very, very similar to Phil Schultz.
And is this something you would have heard in your church growing up?
Oh, absolutely.
And what Christian denomination was yours?
I grew up Baptist, Missionary Baptist in New Orleans.
In New Orleans? Mm-hmm. And what was the name of the church you grew up in?
Greater King Solomon Missionary Baptist Church.
And when did you start singing? What age was that?
My family, I've been a family of singers all my life.
Yeah.
My mom sings and directs the choir.
Okay.
Both of my sisters sing. In fact, they're much better singers than I am. And my grandmother and all of her brothers and sisters. They had a group called the Hollins Family Singers from Mississippi, or Pinola, Mississippi, and then later migrated to Luling, Louisiana. And my dad's side has a few singers and musicians and preachers in his background. So there's a lot of church.
A lot of church
in my family. I started playing piano when I was about 4 years old, mimicking the church organist.
So you started playing in the church at that age?
Organ. I started playing started playing music at that age. By seven, I was playing for the church.
Okay. Would you
wait? 7 years old, you were playing for the church
officially? Yeah, I was the paid musician.
Wow.
7 years old?
At 7 years old.
Come on.
I played for all the choirs. I did all the rehearsals. I didn't get a Sunday off from 7 years old.
From seven. To what age did you do that for, till?
Well, I mean, I still play in church currently, but I play at Concord Baptist Church.
In Brooklyn. Let's now, as we've talked about the line spirituals, the Negro spirituals, now we move now to someone like Thomas Dorsey, who kind of became almost like the father of gospel music.
Let's see, it's a song that my great aunt used to sing.
What's the name?
And she still sings it. This old feisty 82, 83 year old. She plays saxophone.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. but she sings this song every now and then. She's kind of known for singing this song.
Okay.
Let's see.
What's the name of the song?
It's called The Lord Will Make a Way Somehow. Like a ship that's tossed and driven, battered by an angry sea. When the storms of life are raging and the fury falls on me, I wonder what I have done to make this race so hard for me to run. Then I say to my soul, don't worry, because the Lord will make a way somehow. Oh, the Lord will make a way somehow. When beneath the cross I bow, He will take away your sorrow if you let Him have your burdens down. Hey, and when the load gets dark and heavy and the weight of it all is on my brow, there's a sweet relief in knowing, yeah, that the Lord will make a way somehow.
we just heard the music of Thomas Dorsey. Who is Thomas Dorsey?
Yeah, Sullivan, explain, because he really is, what would you say, the father, like the you used to call him maybe the jelly roll of gospel or something, maybe.
Yeah, I would say that.
You would say that.
Yeah, I would
But how would you, what did he do in gospel that you would maybe give him that name?
He was one of the first ones to actually publish music.
Okay.
And you know, he developed his own.
So he's like the W.C. Handy.
Yes.
Yeah. Of gospel music.
Well, yeah, kind of. But yeah, W.C.
But what's the year? What's the year going?
Years to maybe 20s and 30s.
Okay.
You know, somewhere around there. Precious Lord, one of his most popular songs.
Yeah. What is he changing in a sense of the template of what Afro-American music is doing from what we just heard? In a previous of like the Negro spirituals, what is he doing to the music that is apart from the publishing, but also musically too?
Well, he brings the blues in because he was initially a blues pianist. He played for Ma Rainey,
yeah,
and a few other blues singers before he converted and became a soul gospel singer, uh-huh. of gospel musician, secular and sacred music together to create gospel. One of the recordings that I remember hearing as a child is James Cleveland singing "Jesus is the best thing that ever happened to me." And that's basically Gladys Knight's "You're the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me." But he just changed the lyrics to it. "Jesus is the best thing" became a gospel staple.
Wow.
"'Cause you're the best thing that ever happened to me. You're the best thing that ever happened to me."
James Cleveland, would you say, comes after Thomas Dorsey,
yeah.
in a sense of evolving the music?
Yeah. They both came from, I think if I'm historically right, James comes out of the same church that Roberta Martin and
Thomas Dorsey
was the choir director, you know, same church. So they had that same, so
connection.
he got spoon-fed that. From an early age, so to speak.
Would you be able to do "Jesus is the Best Thing for Me"? Would you be able to do that for us?
I'll try. You put me to work, man.
Oh, it's beautiful.
"I've had my share of life's ups and downs. God's been so good to me, and the doubts have been few. Oh, I guess you can say that God has blessed me. For there's never been a time in my life where the Lord didn't see me through. If anyone should ever write my life story, for whatever reason, there might be, he'll be there between each line of pain and glory. I'm a living witness that he will. Jesus is the best thing that ever happened. Jesus is the best thing that ever happened. Jesus is the best thing that ever happened to me." So that's an example of that.
Hey, this is Michael Moenzo, guest host for the Checkout in this lovely situation here with my man Simon Rettner and also with the genius of Sullivan Fortnight. We're here talking about this incredible music which has enriched people for years. What's interesting to me is that, you know these Thomas Dorsey hymns, which is like from a whole nother time period of when you were born. How still is this music in a typical Afro-American household, how is it still effective to healing the people and helping them through stuff that's going on in the world? Was this music still very pertinent to people finding strength in households and stuff, you growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Gospel music, the message behind it has always been about hope of something better after. And it kind of coincides along with the message of the Bible, you know. So the hope that people found in the Bible along set to music,
yeah,
is pretty much what gospel is. And it has been.
And that last song you did, that was a James Cleveland hymn.
That was a James Cleveland hit.
Now, we would say, I see what you're saying.
You
we would say that, yeah, we said Thomas Dorsey's like Jelly Roll. Would you say maybe that James Cleveland is like the Miles of gospel?
Are you getting this from, man?
What would you know in a sense of like how he can scruckle from other people and kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like James's genius, part of James's genius was to see greatness in others and to help nurture and develop it.
Yeah.
He developed an organization called the Gospel Music Workshop of America, which is still in existence today. I think this year is their 50th or 51st anniversary, somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an organization that kind of helped to nurture young people and older people. As a network, major gospel artists can get with younger gospel artists and kind of network with them and kind of help train them and give them exposure and show them, different avenues and, how to approach gospel from a business standpoint.
Ah, okay. And we're going to actually go back to a Thomas Dorsey song, but this is, I think, a song that Take Six.
Ugh. Bro, I didn't.
What? This is a song that Take Six, which is from a whole different time, kind of put into a different context, but actually it's written by Thomas Dorsey. I think it's something.
I have no idea how I'm going to sing this.
We're going to do it right now. You heard it as a young boy from the Take Six version? Is that the version you know?
Absolutely.
So this is interesting because music is changing, it's evolving, inspirational music, but it's still a Thomas Dorsey song. Please, this is called If Ever We Needed the Lord Before.
If we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. Oh, we sure do need him now. Oh, Lord, we sure do need him now. If we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. We need him every day and every hour. Oh Lord, if we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. Oh, we sure do need him now. Oh Lord, we sure do need him now. If we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. We need him every day and every hour. We need him every day and every we need him every day and every hour and every hour, something like that.
I'm Simon Rettner, here for the Checkout from WBGO, and joining us, I asked Michael Moenzo, our very special guest curator and host, to bring in a very special guest, Sullivan Fortnight, maybe making his vocal debut
since
and his organ debut since 10 years of age.
That's right.
And we're performing all of this music that Sullivan Fortner generally doesn't, isn't in his songbook, isn't in his repertoire, because you usually see him in the playing the piano. But we're going to be coming together on August 15th at Le Poisson Rouge.
Yep.
And we want you to join us, because it's going to be an incredible concert, because it's a kind of concept you came up with, Michael. What is the concept?
Well, we're calling it Sacred Protest Songs from Africa to America. And we want it to be, we've curated a show that should be a presentation of the timeline of all of this music that helped guide people and give people inspiration in one context with Sullivan's journey in the Afro-American aesthetic. Vuyo Satachi will express songs of inspiration, protest songs from township songs he heard as a young boy.
Because he grew up in South Africa.
That's right. And then we also going to do our own version of this time expressing inspirational and conscious music to inspire and give people hope.
Speaking of which, Michael Mwenzo, what's really interesting about this music, as it is sacred music, but it really served a very practical function in the African-American community, didn't it?
Yes, it did. You know, if we're looking at it from what it was for the slaves, you know, as they were singing Negro spirituals and all through, I think, the different times of struggles of those people, they used this as a soundtrack to heal and defend themselves. You look at it in those times, and even up to times of the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement, these songs were used in that time as songs to protest, as songs. Even there's a hymn that was written by Thomas Dorsey, which was Martin Luther King's favorite hymn, that Precious Lord Take My Hand. That was a song they would sing at marches.
Take my hand, lead me on.
I think Sullivan, I think we've given him enough money to be able to demonstrate the beauty of what these songs have been through the times. Protest, oppression, strength, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to do a little Precious Lord Take My Hand, that'd be beautiful.
All right. Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, and let me stand. I am tired, I am weak, and take my hand, precious Lord, and lead me on.
We're trying to present some kind of timeline of how this music is evolving and how it's reaching the people and how it's making them, it's giving them strength, through many different times of struggle that they're going through. What would you, how would you say the power of it is affecting the people, especially even in the context of you growing up in New Orleans, and how that is also, you know, it's given your strength to you and everything like that. What is, and for you also too, I want to get a perspective of you as a jazz musician that is coming to a different sphere of your artistry. How is this music still important to you?
Well, one of the first things I learned when I started to play jazz, that gospel music isn't really so far removed from it because it's based on an oral tradition. The music passed down, it's a music that's still pretty much alive.
Yeah.
And when I say alive, it means it can't really be taught in a textbook. It can't really, it has to be taught basically by doing it. And it has to be something, in my book, in my belief, in order to do gospel music effectively, like in order to do jazz effectively, you have to believe in it. You have to understand where it comes from and why it is, and you have to adapt that belief system into it. That belief system has to become a part of your character and how you present yourself, how you carry yourself, because the music comes out as an effect of that. For jazz, I mean, aside from the fact that
it is... Can you give us an example of, like, something that you would be playing in church growing up that would work in a jazz setting?
Now, if I were to play that in most churches, they would look at me like I was stupid.
Because?
Well, because I threw in some very interesting, threw in different things that weren't exactly by the book. But growing up at home, I could play like that and it wouldn't be a problem for some reason. You know, it depends on context and where you come from. But like if you listen to somebody like Thelonious Monk or you listen to R. Tatum. A friend of mine, when I was studying at Oberlin Conservatory, who told me that she grew up in Toledo, Ohio, the pianist at her church was Art Taylor. Pretty wild.
Wow.
Yeah, it said Art would come down and he would just play during church service.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Thelonious Monk and Art Tatum aren't pianists that would immediately come to someone's mind as having gospel sound.
Monk for sure, because the beginnings of his touring
career was with
a traveling evangelist.
Sullivan Fortner, when did you decide you just wanted to be a piano player? Forget the organ. I ain't gonna sing either. But now you're dealing with it now. For us, thankfully, we're all experiencing this today.
I know.
But when did you make that decision? Because you have such an amazing voice.
Oh, thank you. I never really thought I had a good voice,
to be honest.
But, I mean, I've always played. It's just playing. And then jazz came about when I was about 12 or 13. This guy named Ronald Markham came and just changed my life played some jazz, played some classical, played some R&B, played some country music for me one day after rehearsal in church, and I said, that's what I want to do. And the deeper and deeper I got into the music, I just fell in love with the piano and started taking classical lessons and, you know, just really got into the box and fell in love with the box. And now it's at the point where I never play organ. I just only play piano.
Apart from whether you're religious or you believe in the stories and everything, what do you think holds true in this music that will continue to give strength for people, whether or not they believe in God, whether they're atheists?
From an outsider, if I were an outsider and I would just heard gospel for the first time and I heard somebody like, I don't know,
Rance Allen, Shirley Caesar.
Or Shirley Caesar. It's just like, wow, the ability, the natural ability that they can do through their instruments and how they sing is very distinct and it's very different and it's very moving. From a place of a belief and a belief in God, and understanding that there is someone bigger than me, it provides a sense of grounding and stability in an unstable world. It provides a sense of hope and a sense of belonging in a place where you may not always feel like you belong, or you may not necessarily feel that you're safe there. You know, you can find safety and refuge in the message.
And I'm thankful that you did this for me and for the world, that we could hear this and hear this gift and hear this music presented in this way. And thank you, Sullivan.
No, I appreciate it.
Simon?
Thank you, Sullivan Fortner. And why don't we remind our audience just how good you are at the piano, since we've been hearing all this organ music. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.